back down to earth with a bang, or still riding a wave of positivity. Gary Monk's resurgent Ewes couldn't follow up their back-to-back wins with much more wanted points, losing 1-0 to Blackpool. But despite that, still maintaining a five-point gap to the relegation zone, and crucially, another game closer to the finish line. Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Julian Roberts, and I'll start with an apology for releasing this pod later than the traditional Monday morning slot. I know there's plenty of listeners who like to kick the week off with a dose of UTAS on their Monday morning commute. So I do apologise. It was a mixture of hangovers, some poor scheduling, mainly from me on both halves that got in the way. But we're here now. It's just a two-man review show today. I'm joined by Tom Walker. Tom, how you feeling, mate? Feeling recovered? It's always Sunday,
yeah, good.
Out, isn't it?
Yeah. Much better than if we'd actually done it 24 hours ago, to be honest with you.
Much more coherent pod, I think, we're going to put together than if we had a try yesterday.
Yeah, we're late, but I would like to think that slightly more rested. And, you know, it's a busy schedule this time of the season, isn't it? So we need to make sure that we're, as close to 100% as we possibly can be. And we felt that the extra day's rest just gave us that impetus to go and deliver some superb content. But you'll be the judges of that in 45 minutes.
Experienced podcasters like us, the time off is as important as the time on, right? So
we know how to manage our bodies in the running.
Yeah, exactly. When you come to the final push, you've got to be smart when it comes to your rest and recovery. Here we are anyway, Monday night, ready to talk about Blackpool 1, Cambridge 0. Tom, let's start generally. What's your reflections on the game 48 hours later, I guess?
You know what? I think, the cliche is, and it's something that we said definitely when things weren't going well or were going worse than they are now. I'm thinking particularly after Reading and after Lincoln. I think the phrase that we wheeled out a few times was it's not so much about losing and it's more about the manner of the defeat. And let's be clear, at half time we were sort of thinking, oh dear, we're maybe heading that way again. And then you know what? We gave it a decent go in the second half, one or two opportunities, keeper forced into a good save, hit the post, and you know, you kind of come away from it thinking, well, you know what, there's something there. Obviously didn't yield any points, so it's not really, I guess, any good for us immediately. But I think, you know, we discussed and probably Derby aside, that was our hardest fixture left. And if you can go and give a team like Blackpool a bit of a scare, I think a little bit, then that's probably not a bad kind of thing to take into the running period with you, I guess. And at the flip side of everything that we say and the way that we pick it apart, and analyse it is that it is kind of a stage of the season where our results are not necessarily the be-all and end-all. You can actually counter, I guess, what I'm about to say with that. Look, if results have not gone our way, then maybe we've missed an opportunity to capitalise. But I'd kind of look at it maybe the other way. Look, we're a game less to go. And, the gap is, all right, a bit smaller, but still significant enough that you would think we should be in a decent enough spot to kind of see ourselves over the line. The bookies' odds have lengthened massively, since that Reading game. And, obviously it's a disappointing result, but I guess if you want to look at it kind of diplomatically, you'd say Barnsley away, Wigan at home, Blackpool away, you get 6 points from that. You know, you'd probably feel confident enough saying that from the next, four or five games, we should have enough about us to take enough points to do what we need to do. So, yeah, disappointing result. Obviously, it is. Things in there to be positive about, things in there to improve on. But just a case of one to the next one, I guess.
Yeah. So pretty much agree with all of that. I do think a crucial point that you made there is for me, this is the toughest fixture that we had left, because as much as obviously Derby are clearly a better side than Blackpool, for me, like, I do fancy us at home more than I would against the fourth best home team in the league, a team that's beaten plenty of teams in the top half of the division and plenty of teams around the top six at home, and like, it's such a tough ask to go there and pick up points. Obviously, we were more confident after the weekend, but you just nailed it there with that. If you're looking at Barnsley, Wigan and Blackpool and you're taking 6 points from that, it's really hard to turn your nose up at that, really. And on the point about whether you're capitalising on it or not, obviously we didn't. And I think if we had have nabbed a point, what that point would have done would have been a huge one in terms of how that league table looked, right? Because, I mean, Port Vale are clearly the biggest winners from Saturday. If you look at if you look at the league table. But I think it's just another game closer, right? It's 5 points that teams have got to make up on us. And I think as much as that was a tricky fixture for us, other teams are going to have those sorts of fixtures themselves. So, slight missed opportunity. But let's talk about the performance, because I think that is a crucial point. And I think people come out of these games not just on we're not on the end of a 4-6-0 like we were a couple of times, obviously not in the not too distant past. But Tom, I think maybe the thing that we can take heart from, and I know it's not performance, not points, like you said, absolutely not what I'm trying to say, but first half, yous were poor. I mean, we had zero shots in the first half. The stats are terrible. I mean, we had 28% possession, obviously no XG, no shots, no big chances, no corners. Basically just, attack against defence, didn't show up, and almost set up that way a little bit. And it didn't feel like the right way to set up against what to me were aside with some decent individual players, but maybe not quite, haven't really played together very well, especially as of late, their form isn't brilliant. But then second half, much, much improved. Do you think that difference in performance is actually the biggest thing we can take heart from here, that we really did give it a go second half, and you could easily sit here and argue that we were good for a point?
I'd struggle to go as far as to say that we really deserved a point out of it. I guess the flip side of it is you look at what did Blackpool do to really earn a win? They were the better team than us in the first half. The stats don't lie in that regard. But I feel like if that game had finished 0-0, probably no one would have too many complaints. But I just think for how poor we were in the first half, if anything, we lost it rather than Blackpool really kind of outclassing us. And like you quite rightly say, for a team with the individual quality that they've got in parts of that pitch, you kind of want to come away from the game thinking they've really beaten us here and they've really kind of gone out and earned the win, which I'm not sure was totally the case. But I just think if you go for 45 minutes, you don't impact the game at all. You do leave yourself a lot to do. And part of the second half, I would like to kind of put a spin on it that it's something that Monk's looked at and seen, little tweaks here and there, a bit of a grilling at half time, and they've really responded well to those things. Part of it is probably just the fact that game state, particularly this stage of the season, does really dictate things. We obviously spoke to Jack in the preview, and he feels that Blackpool's playoff hopes are gone, but factually, mathematically, they're not. And if you're in a position where you're leading a game and you're playing against a team who are also scrapping for points at this part of the season, you kind of cling on to it with everything that you've got, and therefore you sit in a little bit more, and that allows us maybe the opportunity to kind of, just exert ourselves a little bit more on the front end of the pitch. So I would struggle to go as far as to say that we really deserve the point. That said, it wasn't a game where we were thoroughly outclassed, and that has happened quite recently. So I guess there's maybe a positive, I guess, that we learnt lessons. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I mean, we had a question from Simon which says, did the negative tactics in the first half cost us the game? And it sounds like maybe you're saying we sort of showed them a little bit too much respect in the first half and didn't capitalise on. I mean, I suppose that was a bit of a disappointment for me, definitely at half time, that I thought we'd go into the game with a different sort of energy than we did. It felt like we did sit in a lot, granted for all the reasons that you've said, but actually I thought we'd approach it a bit differently given the momentum that we had and the lack of momentum that they had, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it's kind of a discussion of, the kind of two-sided coin, one of which is what do we do to impact the game and what do Blackpool do to stop us from doing it? And they're a good side. We're not going to go. I get what you mean about the energy that we should and in theory, maybe would have taken from, realistically the best Easter period we possibly could have had and the momentum that sort of gives you. But it doesn't change the fact that you're going away to Bloomfield Road, which is, it's a stereotypical tough place to go. They're fourth best home record in the league, and that's behind the top three in the league as they stand. So I think it was unlikely we were going to go out there and kind of dictate things too much. And I think what we saw in the second half was better, but in the first half, it was just kind of a bit of, kind of sitting in, maybe having a bit of a game plan of thinking, how can we actually win this game? And it didn't quite kind of pan out like that. But I think if Rick Spector's going to Blackpool and really, well, having seen what I've seen from this team over the last sort of 5 or 6 months, as we have, go to a place like that and really be in their face, up and at them, attacking, making things really difficult for them. Yeah, I'm not really sure with that team, to be honest, despite having had a really decent Easter weekend. Doesn't make for great audio content, particularly on a podcast. It's designed literally to analyse this game of football, but it doesn't necessarily need to be analysed too much more than that. It's just kind of like, you've gone away to a tough team. You've been punished for maybe not being up to the right standard for the first part of the game, and you couldn't quite show the required level of quality needed in the second part of the game to kind of rectify what happened earlier on. And, you know, when you're talking about a fixture, which is, again, as they stand, 8th against 19th in the league, that's kind of how it goes, I guess, sometimes. So it's not the end of the world. There's plenty of positives in there to take away from it. But yeah, for us, it's all about Saturday.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm sorry for making you do your job and analyse this game. But I guess
it is a shame that, though. Like, it is a shame to analyse just the game, because Blackpool's one hell of a town and deserves its recognition for that.
I mean, my highlight of the day was definitely our seafront escapade on the horse and carriage between pubs. Like, one of the best ways to get from one pub to the other, I've got to say.
Yeah, as many listeners to this will know, you know, we're obviously slightly exiled in London, you know, part of the London news, up the boys
and girls.
And I have to say, yeah, of course, more recently, of course. Don't tell Joey Barton that. He'd be absolutely livid. You know, one thing that arguably the greatest city in the world, home to like 9 million people, and you know, business infrastructure that is the envy of the planet, is missing, is being able to have a nice little horse and cart a journey down a promenade pre-match.
Imagine that from like Holborn to Covent Garden, like dipping along on a horse.
You can do it, to be fair. But I will say it's much more transactional than what we got to experience in Blackpool. Admittedly, felt quite funny for the first bit of the journey. And then for the you know, the bit when you actually pull up to the pub, you're kind of like, oh, for fuck's sake, we actually look really strange here. Because it's a carriage full of late 20s, 30-year-old blokes.
In what can only be described as a bright pink Cinderella pumpkin of a carriage. Oh, great stuff. No,
just to round that off, you need to stop asking about our performance and start asking more about that.
Well, look, one last question on the performance, if we can. Actually, it's more of a general thing. I think there's a big talking point was the halftime substitution, which obviously took us about 10 minutes to realise what had happened because of the sort of state we were in. No, but from what we gather, it was a tactical change, or at least I haven't seen anything personally that says differently, to take Ryan Bennett off and bring on Zeno Ibsen-Rossi. The game itself, I thought Rossi actually did really well. He's like, from the little that I've seen of him, he's always been quite comfortable carrying the ball. He's got a bit of that Lloyd Jones ability to sort of step out with the ball and break the lines. And I think it did give us a bit more of an extra man in midfield, where Digby and Cousins, whenever we had the ball in the first half, it's not really in their game to control possession moving forward. Like, they both have good qualities of their games, and we're going to come onto them in a second, actually. But I thought what Rossi did is just add that extra man and that extra bit of impetus when we had the ball move forward. Do you think in general, Tom, that's something that we might see a bit more of? Because it might give a bit more, I don't know, he's a bit more of a dynamic player maybe in that sense than Ryan Bennett. But then you end up with a back three of Danny Andrew, a left back, Zeno Ibsen-Rossi, very inexperienced, and Mamadou Diop, even more inexperienced, and then Liam Bennett, I guess, playing at right back. It suddenly looks like really inexperienced, right, as a back line.
Yeah, obviously it feels slightly harsh to Ryan Bennett. You go, you know, you take you out of the team, and suddenly the average age drops about 5 years. But and that's just where he's at. I think, just on Rossi specifically, like, yeah, like, it'd be good to see a bit more of him, because he's, you know, it's easy to forget, like, he's been at this football club for the thick end of two full seasons, and it feels like, I know he's played in sort of stops and starts, but it feels like we've never really watched him play for us, like, you know, other than sort of the odd sub appearance, like last 10 when we're trying to see out a win or see out a result, or you know, starts in trophy games and stuff. It's blasphemy mentioning that competition, isn't it, specifically right now?
Yeah. That is bad timing.
So sorry about that. Another major trophy added to the long decorated halls of Peterborough United's trophy cabinet. Congratulations to him. Many happy returns. I think, look, on Rossi specifically, he's obviously a pretty mobile guy. I thought he did well. And I guess it's kind of less a point about Rossi and just how it all kind of looked as a back three, which is obviously fairly new to us. But, like, we did limit Blackpool to pretty little. You know, even the shot that they scored from, like, it's what, 20, 25 yards out, curled into the bottom corner. Mm. I think against most teams, you would take limiting that sort of thing to their best opportunity. I think they had one other in the first half, which hit the side net in. But just, like, you know, in terms of the second half, it's a weird change to make. You're right, because unless obviously there is any kind of injury that's forced that. But, you know, you do take all your experience out of the team, really, all your centre half experience out of the team, that is. Danny Andrew, I think, continues to fill in quite nicely. But I think Rossi's got another year. Like, we paid a fee for him. Like, we don't know exactly how much that is, but you suggest it was an investment that, you know, means that you would at least like to see him play some football at some point. And I think he gave a pretty decent account of himself. I'm not sure that means he'll necessarily be starting every game, particularly not until we are safe or can get as close to being safe as possible. But he's done himself no harm, and it's maybe a little bit premature to think this, but I do kind of wonder how much of this is with one our next season. You know, we've talked a lot about Ryan Bennett, what he has done in terms of performances, in terms of application at times. Do we see a long-term future for him at the football club? Maybe not. Rossi, do we? You'd hope so, because we've obviously, you know, done the outlay and stuff. So remains to be seen. But yeah, a good account of himself. And let's be honest, we're going to have to see more of it, because he's got another few months to come with the club.
Yeah, absolutely. The only other thing I've thought of is I've just looked at Ryan Bennett's disciplinary record, and he is on 9 yellows. So I don't know if it's a precautionary thing, but it still seems like an odd time to do it when you're only one down in a game that, you know, is obviously still very, very winnable, I guess, in that moment, right? I don't know.
It's weird, though, because, like, it didn't feel like he was on the edge.
No, no,
you know, of doing anything. And let's be honest, we have seen it in times gone by where you have that feeling of, bloody hell, if he stays on the pitch for like 5 more minutes, exactly, he's going to get himself sent off. And that's the weird thing, because you would only have been protecting yourself against going down to 10 men, right? Because that was actually on the booking.
So he was actually on a booking, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so it wouldn't actually, yeah. Obviously, it would have mattered if we'd gone down to 10 men, but
thinking that
might happen. And you'd have to think that you would trust the player's experience as Ryan Bennett to know how to manage himself on a booking.
Exactly.
But yeah, obviously not.
But yeah. Anyway, look, it'd be good to see Rossi play a bit more. I thought he did really well off the bench. Just moving forward, we've got a question from Kwame, which says, while he wasn't perfect, Cousins continued to show improvement on Saturday. Digby, on the other hand, kept giving the ball away with heavy touches and overhit passes. He's asked, is it time for him to move on? I think let's leave the sort of transfer chat for a few weeks yet. But in general, that area of the pitch, Tom, like, Cousins, I think it's fair to say, last couple of games has, we said it after the Easter weekend, and I think we should say it again today. I thought we did play quite well on Saturdays, back to being that sort of tidier version of himself as a footballer that we saw definitely for a period before his terrible run of form that we rightly criticised. But I guess it's a more general question. Does a balance in the midfield worry you a touch? Because especially in that first half, like, our ability to, like, have control of the ball and move the game forward and, like, an attack from the middle of the pitch, like, it just seemed like it was really lacking in that area. And I think without, like, a George Thomas type of player, those two aren't very equipped to do that. What do you reckon?
I think so. I think it's been a problem all season, really. And, you know, let's be honest, it has been the one area of the pitch that we've consistently laid into, basically on a weekly basis. And it's right to mention Cousins' performance as well, because I think he actually probably was one of the positives, from the whole team, really. And certainly in terms of that bit of the pitch, was the one who was kind of pulling his weight. And, you know, God knows who shelled plenty of criticism his way for not doing that. So it's only right that we do continue to mention it when it is happening. I think we're well beyond the point of looking at a player like Paul Digby and expecting him to be that guy who's going to drive you forward in terms of, you know, really contributing to attacks and really, you know, helping to kind of carve out chances. And I think if that is what we're expecting from Paul Digby, we need to rethink that. But I don't think it is. I actually think probably the issue with that was maybe not having someone, particularly the two ahead of him, well, Kaikai and Brophy before they both came off, not having someone who can just maybe just drop a little bit deeper and pick up the ball. I'm thinking Lancaster specifically.
Yeah, totally.
I'd have liked to have seen him play. And I know he's maybe struggled for minutes a bit more than he was previously recently. But I feel like he's like without a Thomas, for example, he should be the player who's able to do that, who can maybe just take a bit of that, you know, a bit of the responsibility for basically being a bit more cultured or a bit braver on the ball away from someone like Paul Digby, because that's not his role. And it's a role that suits someone like Jack a lot, you know, I think a lot more. So I think that's where the main problem was, because again, like we're talking within the context of Blackpool away, which is a tough game against a team who have been competing for and still are mathematically for the playoffs all season. You know, the role of Cousins and Digby in that fixture becomes a bit different. So you need maybe someone else just to be doing it for them, I think. But yeah, I think I just think overall, like, yeah, all right, Digby wasn't amazing, and we don't necessarily expect exactly like, you know, sort of Trek Artista style, like number 10 sort of football from him, of course. But I actually think of all the games we've watched recently, I think probably that's one where you look at the centre mid and you go, actually, they've probably done all right overall. Yeah. It just wasn't the day for them.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And they sort of give Sonny Carey that one.
Look how balanced I'm being.
You are. It's different. It's a different Tom Walker to 2 weeks ago, isn't it?
Yeah. Fickle, arguably.
Very fickle, yeah. Last thing to talk about for this game. We can't finish chat about Blackpool without the one moment that we had, really, or real gilt-edged chance, which fell to our man Catcher. It's quite a nice little move, I guess. I mean, I wouldn't describe it as flowing. It sort of felt like there's a nice little flick over the defender's head, and then Bond, I don't know, doesn't quite really know exactly when he's going to release the ball, and then it sort of goes through the defender. The catcher doesn't quite know it's coming to him, takes a touch, and it's like this sort of half attempt that dribbles to the post and wide. But regardless, it's such a big chance, isn't it? And, you know, as a famous man once said, fine lines. How important do you think that miss could be? Or I guess we're sort of talking about the context of the game, but frustrating that that falls to catcher, and you do back into score in that situation, don't you?
Yeah, because
you do specifically.
Yeah, yeah, because he's a professional footballer who's playing in the league. Yeah. I do. I do back him to score, and frankly, expect him to score
from 6 yards out.
Obviously, the word I'm looking for here is not funny, right? But I think we could all see the ironic side of it if that does turn out to be a moment that sends us down. And under the Abbey Stand sponsored footballer doing that from 6 yards out. Yeah, look, really, like, really frustrating one, because he should just do better. And you're right, like, it felt like the opportunity had gone a little bit, and then it comes back to him, and then he's actually able to take a touch, and he just can't.
He doesn't like any purchase on the ball, right? It's such a weird sort of, like, I don't know.
Yeah, do you know, like, do you know what I was thinking? I watched the highlights back just before this, just to refresh myself for parts of the game. And I just thought, like, in that moment, and it's one of those things I kind of hate saying, as much as people probably hate to hear it, but if that's Paul Mullin there, like, he's absolutely levering it. Like, his boots flying off with the ball. Like, he's just putting it, not into Rose Ed, but, you know, he's hammering it. Like, he's taking the net off with it as well. And I just feel that's maybe a situation where that was required. It was maybe a little bit too cute, maybe. Is that maybe being a bit kind?
I know what you mean. There was almost no confidence in it, right? It looked like a player just lacking in.
You're just wanting someone just to really just stick it past. I mean, it's obvious. Yeah.
Stick it past the keeper. Yeah.
Score, to be honest. Score. Yeah. Just want someone to score.
I'll tell you what, Lyle Taylor scores there. I'll tell you that much. But he's injured. So
he does, doesn't he? Yeah.
He does, yeah. Anyway, look.
Would Bond score there, you reckon?
Oh, I don't know. I think
the roles were reversed.
The word confidence, I just said it. The whole move to me struck me as like two players who weren't quite like tip-top confidence form. Do you know what I mean? Like, even Bond's ball across, like, I think a player in confidence doesn't, let's be honest, like, from the highlights that I watch, it sort of goes straight through the defender, right? Like, the ball isn't exactly like perfectly measured. Feels like he should play it slightly earlier, and he sits on it a bit. So I don't know. Maybe backbone because he's more of an out-and-out striker than Kachunga. But you said it at the start. Kachunga's an ex-Premier League forward. Like, he's about 6-7 yards out. He should be bagging. But anyway, look.
That's us saying it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I reckon you'd back there. I'd back you to score there.
Oh, 100%.
If anything, too close for the some of the screamers you score, mate.
I much prefer taking them on the volley from about 35 yards out, to be honest. You feel a lot more comfortable from that.
What are we worried about? Anyway, look, okay, let's wrap the game up. At the end of the day, we end up 5 points ahead of Burton in 21st. Vale, obviously the biggest winners of the day with a point, the only side in the bottom seven not to lose. We are still going to have to do something somewhere, aren't we, Tom? There's going to be a... that's what sort of came out to me, that like 5 points is a lovely cushion. You'd have taken it absolutely a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you snapped around for a couple of weeks ago. But we're still going to have to do something somewhere. And it just felt like half an opportunity considering how we played second half, which is that frustration. But look, we're a game further on. You still feeling good about safety, survival?
Yeah, I think so. We're in this weird sort of limbo, I think, at the moment, where I think secretly we all think we're kind of there already, and we're all pretty much safe.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't want to put it to the test, would you? You wouldn't want to.
No.
No, not completely. No.
I reckon on exactly what we're on now, my prediction is we would stay up, but by the skin of our teeth, last day, something.
You'd be refreshing. You'd be refreshing phones anyway in a port.
Big time.
Or watching it happen in front of you.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, yeah.
This is gonna happen. Yeah, it's just a step too early, isn't it, to kind of really be comfortable. I think, and I think it's what we said after Easter weekend as well. But it's just one win, isn't it? You're one win away. Like you're that final step from just really being able to ease up a little bit more, and that's the hardest one, isn't it? I guess just that kind of final step. I think, like, when I look at the table, I mean, like, I know we say that Port Vale were the big winners from the day, and you know, I guess they kind of are, because you know they're the only ones that pick up a point. But even they're still got 5 points behind us, and starting to look like the run-ins, like Vale, like they've still got to go to Posh, they've still got to go to Bolton as well. Like, that's two really tough games. They've also got to play us. I'm not saying that's as hard as the two that I've just mentioned, but yeah. But obviously it's a difficult game, and like. Then you look at Burton's and Burton played Cheltenham, so that's a fixture we mentioned before, which I guess in theory sort of leaves Burton with three games to catch us rather than four. They've got to go to Stevenage, obviously fighting for playoffs. Reading, who are obviously you know, much improved, as we saw firsthand. And I think the ones that we, you know, we're all kind of assuming are going to get out of it, probably again because of their fixtures, are Cheltenham. And maybe it's the fact that Cheltenham have still got this game in hand on us, and that's obviously against Carlisle. So maybe if the table is, you know, by the time this comes out, if people are listening to it on Wednesday morning or whatever, if by the time that they've played their game in hand on us and they've lost that or picked up only a point in it, maybe we start to rest a bit easier. But I think that... look, we're still in a really good spot, and you know, you'd much rather be where we are now than where we were this time 12 months ago. But I think it's just the step we've got to take now is the hardest step, and you want to take it as soon as possible, really. I think Saturday's an opportunity against Charlton. It's a difficult opportunity. But I mean, in theory, you know, they're now pretty much done, aren't they? Hopefully they can just rest up a bit easy.
Yeah, they are the sort of team you want to play in terms of, like, they are striking me as being quite beachy. Worth sort of running through, you're right, there is this round of midweek fixtures for us specifically. Cheltenham, Carlisle, like you mentioned. Cheltenham, like, sort of need all 3 points from that. And Vale go to Posh, so hopefully they can do us a favour. Charlton also play midweek, interesting for Saturday. Maybe a bit tighter, a bit leggier, you never know.
I don't know the ins and outs of Nathan Jones's mind, and thank God for that.
Thank God for that. Yeah, got your lucky stars.
Must be a truly confusing place at times. but I do wonder if, like, let's say Charlton get a good result on Tuesday night, I think that would make them mathematically safe if they win. Maybe not quite, because they'll have played a couple of games more than Port Vale, but you know, if results go right for them, they can be basically safe. I wonder if that's the point where Jones starts going next season and starts putting in kids. I mean, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Be brilliant. Brilliant. Beachy team playing kids. All over that. It's interesting to say. I mean, we'll talk about this more on the review show, obviously, on Thursday, which this week is Jack and Jordan. So they'll talk about it. But it's interesting just looking at Saturday that, like, there is a set of fixtures there that I think all of our rivals, maybe except Burton probably, but even Burton have Stevenage away as the toughest one. Stevenage not in the best form at all. Maybe sort of limping towards the finish line and they're not out of that playoff battle at all. But they are, well, they're below Blackpool. They're on the same points as Blackpool now. But then you've got like Cheltenham, we've got Bristol Rovers at home. Rovers are in terrible form, aren't scoring goals. Vale have got Exeter at home, very beachy and not a brilliant side. Obviously, we've got Charlton that we just spoke about. So interesting one to see how we're going to, even like Shrewsbury, we've got Wickham at home, like again, beachy. Interesting that we've all got home games that, I'm not saying we all fancied winning, but I think in the context of the league, they're almost as good as we can all ask for. Burton also apparently about to sack their manager, but that's let's not go into that because that could get old. That news could get old very quickly. Okay, cool. Let's wrap up. Just one last point before we wrap up. Obviously, Thursday show we'll go into a bit more detail on the league table after the midweek fixtures. So look forward to that. Piece of news we got today was about youth players being released. So contracts have been offered or triggered to Glenn McConnell, Louis Chadwick, Brandon Njoku, Dan Barton, Amaru Kunda. Cornder and Reese Hipwell. Salim Akambi, Kai Yearn, Harvey Beckett, Tom Finch and Greg Sandiford will all depart at the end of the season. Now, I know we've, between us, have barely watched a lot of these players, right? So very limited knowledge. And there are people, I'd point you to Matt Ramsey, friend of the pod, who will have a lot more knowledge of it. So if you just sort of bug him on Twitter, he'll probably be able to give you a bit more of a rundown than us. But is there
or anything- he'll tell you to fuck off.
Yeah. But is there anything else that surprises you, really? I mean, Yearn's the obvious one here, right? That one was a bit of a headline, I guess, in terms of players being released.
Yeah, Yearn's a real surprise. And I don't want to be too much of a doom monger, but that's the one where you think, we're going to look back on that, aren't we, in a few years to come and think, oh, God, we had a bit of a gem there. Especially with some of the wicked whispers I've seen linking him with where he might end up.
I've seen the same whispers, and they are wicked.
Yeah,
they are not
especially
nice.
Given the fact that it's a football club who are reputed among football league circles as being one which is essentially just a development ground for like multi-million pound centre forwards or forwards. So yeah, that was a bit of a weird one. Like, you know, you assume it's not been done on the basis of his footballing ability. You assume it's been done on maybe the idea that, you know what, you know, obviously we've framed it as releasing him, but is there part of it where he's just gone, yeah, I don't really fancy this, to be honest. And we've gone, well, okay, fine. Well, we'll just leave you then. Which is arguably probably the right way to be doing it, I suppose, regardless of someone's quality. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not gonna pretend to know you know, exactly how good all these guys are. I'm glad McConnell's staying, I'm glad Njoku is as well.
Yeah, word for Dan Barton as well at that Arsenal game, which is the most I've basically seen of these lads, but he was brilliant against Arsenal in that Youth Cup game last season. Looked like quite an exciting young player.
Yeah, I mean, look, it must be a really difficult time. You know, we always talk about the retained list, that, you know, particularly last season has been one, you know, it's difficult seeing players that you know and sort of, you know, kind of have, you know, to some extent fond memories of moving on. But I mean, it must be so difficult if you're, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old and you've, you know, put years of work into trying to make it basically, and then Cambridge United turn around at the end of the season and tell you that you're not good enough, which you assume is probably the case in some of these instances. So yeah, hopefully whatever they're going to do next will be good, other than Kai Yearn, if he makes the move that we're suspecting he might, who in fact can go and do one. Again, a bit presumptuous to just simply be sat here abusing a 17-year-old kid, but
it's not the first time you're doing it, it won't be the last.
I'm not above it. I'm not above it. But look, let's revisit that one in the summer, and if we have to go a bit harder, then we will. But yeah, glad to see the ones staying that are staying. I think there's some really good talent in there. I've seen in stops and starts, McConnell and Njoku, they seem to have a bit about them, but let's just say that having a contract triggered by Cambridge United is the first step on what should hopefully be a very, very long road. So, fair play to him. Good luck to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well put. Okay, that'll do for today. Preview show out on Thursday. Apologies again for the delay for this show. Tom, thank you very much as ever. Let's wrap up by ending with Adam Tarasevich's roundup of the women's team in March, bleeding into April as well.
So this time last month, I came on here full of praise and optimism after a historic Cup semi-final and a couple of league wins as well. While they might not want to describe it that way, United have had a bit of a hangover since then. They've picked up just 1 point from a possible 12 in the league. They started at Loftus Road against QPR, a 3-0 defeat where Cambridge struggled really to get into the game. QPR were two up inside half an hour and there were three up inside the hour. Despite a couple of late efforts, Cambridge came away having been beaten by the better team on the day. Injuries were a factor. Marden and Seymour both had to come off and United made their third and final change at half-time. Darren Marjoram, ever the honest evaluator of a game, did pick up on this post-match and how it affected his tactical choices, dominated by who they could put out there, really. A midweek home tie against London Seaward looked an opportunity to set things right. Pretty even game. It was lit up by a beautiful strike from Ruth Fox early in the second. But as the game went on, visitors ramped up the pressure, found an equaliser with about three to go. Whilst losing out on 3 points, especially that late, is frustrating. It was an even match and Lauren Webb, who's had a brilliant season, kept United in it with some great saves. After a home tie against Ashford was postponed, United finished March with a trip to the South Coast to play Worthing. Worthing have crept up on me with how good they've been. They're actually second in the league. And before the game, Cambridge announced the addition of Therese Addison-Hardy, who last played for MK Dons. She made her debut as a sub during the game, but two goals at the beginning of the second half gave Worthing the win. Probably the greatest takeaway for United will be Lily Horsler and Holly Plummer, who both made the bench, having been called up from the under-18s. United have put a lot into their progression of the pathway. They've done developments in that within the last year, and so it's really good to see two players make the bench so young. And Plummer actually got her debut in the senior team in this one as well. But finally, most importantly, at the time of talking, United played at the Abbey to start the month of April. They welcomed Norwich City, had the specific aim of breaking their attendance record, and did just that, attracting 932 fans, which is absolutely fantastic. Game-wise, pretty difficult circumstances. Doug Shulman-esque capricious breeze at the least, I'd say. It meant the game wasn't the cleanest, wasn't the most composed. Both attackers and defenders outfoxed a bit by the flight of the ball at times. But one positive it has was United's opener. Brooke Chil-Ferris tried her luck, having had her own corner cleared straight back to her. Cross-come shot, had real whip on it, and flew straight into the top corner. Genuinely brilliant. Maybe the best goal I've seen at the Abbey this year. Wind be damned. Just magnificent. Unfortunately, Norwich equalised from the penalty spot later in the first half, and they took the lead on the counter again soon after. Ella Marden was played at left back in this one rather than further forward. She had a bit of a tough time defending against Norwich's attackers. A quick break and then a cross found Natasha Snelling completely wide open. She's really stood out whenever we've played Norwich in the last couple of years. United showed some good pressure at times, but with the wind, I think Norwich showed better physicality. Outside of a few periods for Cambridge, they were in the ascendancy. Cambridge failed to equalise before half-time in one of their better spells. The best chance fell to Bella Simmons, who looped one onto the roof of the net, just about. And Norwich got their third early in the second half on the break. Really good ball across, found Snelling again. I can't remember if it was just before or after this, but I remember seeing Darren Marjoram shouting at the defence to retreat back. Essentially, it seemed like we gave up on the offside trap altogether as Norwich had the wind in their favour in the second half so drastically. United did pull one back. Stoiko Down essentially scored a carbon copy of Norwich's second. Fox broke this time, cut it back to her. Very nice. But Norwich completed a 4-2 win directly from a probably wind-assisted corner. It was a shame that the game frustrated Cambridge a bit on a day with such a great atmosphere, but Norwich made the better of it. Lauren Webb was probably the best player on the pitch, maybe altogether, but certainly for Cambridge. She made three or four good saves, denied Norwich further goals, most of them one-on-ones. she somehow had a great game despite conceding four behind what was a makeshift defence. Lauren Rouse, the only true centre-back in it. This poor run of form kind of mirrors last season a bit as well, where results trailed off some. But equally, these have been some tough games, especially the last two against Worthing and Norwich. Cambridge have now played the top three, which is Worthing, Norwich and Wimbledon, twice each, and they've picked up just 1 point. I'm sure the goal will be to put themselves really among it before long. But this shows there is still a bit of a gap in quality. Today, it felt physical and stamina related more than anything else. At the bottom of the table, I think today's results mean Hayward's Heath have been relegated and Cambridge City look like they might join them in relegation. So we might have to make the most of our City derby while we can. That is one of the final three United have to play. A word on today's attendance. It was absolutely outstanding. Really good sign of how much is being put into promoting the women's team at the moment. Some great work is being done. And recently, Alicia Stoico-Down and Lauren Webb joined her game too as player advocates. They joined Darren Marjoram, who I think is the first manager advocate altogether for the campaign, which at our club is run by Emma Smith. There's a small interview with Alicia and Lauren on the Her Game 2 website, which I recommend reading. But that is all from me. I'll be back, I imagine, after the season's end now. Three more, all of them at home, and not to mention a pretty big cup final against Derby.